then there's going to be a monitor for 100. If he knows the answer, they go home and everything is fine. Nobody has to come to you. Only if he doesn't know the answer, then you're going to make a group for every 1,000 yidden. And you're going to pick the best monitor of those 1,000. He's going to be the leader of 1,000 yidden. Whoever has a problem or a shaila or an argument, they'll go to him and he'll take care of it. And they'll never have to come to you. And only if the leader of the 1,000 doesn't know the answer, then he can come to you. So out of 600,000, there will be 600 leaders of just 1,000, and they'll help all the yidden from their group of 1,000. So then in the end, only the most difficult, the hardest shilas, or the biggest arguments that nobody can figure out, they'll come to your line in the morning. And Kenelach, Moshe said, it's good. And he did it, and he made the monitors. So that way, Moshe had just a small line outside, and everybody was happy, because they didn't have to wait in line so much, and they got their answers answered, and they got their questions answered, and they got their arguments answered, and everything worked out. Now, because Yisroi was the one who gave this Eitzah, he has a whole parsha that's named after him, Yisroi. Yisroi, a whole parsha named after him, and he gave an Eitzah for Moshe Rabbeinu. This is in Parshas Yisroi. As we know, Kinalach, I'm not going to go on forever with this tape, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu finally took the Yidden to Har Sinai. And the day they got to Har Sinai was Rosh Chodesh Sivan. And over there it says that they camped around the mountain like one person, mamish, with one heart. The Av Yisrael was tremendous. Everybody was friends and everybody was good to each other. And the Eibishter wanted to give the Torah to every Jew. And finally, when it came, Shavuos, the time for Matan Torah, and of course there was a fence around Har Sinai that nobody should touch it, it was so halik. And they had gotten ready for days, the Shleishes Mehagbala before that, and every year it was so halik. And the mountain was smoking, and there was fire and thunder and lightning. The Eibishter gave all the Jews the first of the two Aseres HaDibros. Everybody heard Anoichi Hashem Elokecha and Eloi Yalacha Elokim Acherim. Every Yid heard from Hashem himself that I am Hashem your God and you shouldn't have any geshkes. But it was so strong, it was such a powerful thing to hear Hashem speak, the Yid ran away from Har Sinai and they didn't want to hear anything more. And the Malachim came and pushed them back. They said, go back. Hashem wants to give you the Torah. They say, it's too much for us. We can't hear it. After each one, they died, and Hashem had to make Tchiyas HaMeisim. And so they asked Moshe Rabbeinu, he should go on Har Sinai to get the Torah. And he'll give it to them. He'll hear it from Hashem, and he'll bring down the Torah to the Yidden. It was just too much for them. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm going up on Har Sinai, and he's going to go for 40 days and 40 nights. He did not take food. He did not take water, and he didn't take any sleeping bag either. Because Moshe Rabbeinu did not eat, and he did not sleep, and he did not drink for 40 days and 40 nights on Har Sinai. And he was the shliach to receive the Torah from Hashem. As he was climbing up Har Sinai Kinalach, he disappeared in the clouds. And not only it was clouds, Hashem brought the Shemayim, the Himmel, with the Malachim down on Har Sinai. And all of a sudden the Malachim see a little man walking up into the Himmel. Because at the same time Moshe is walking up a mountain, he's walking up into the Himmel going to Hashem. And the Malachim get angry. What's a little person doing in the Himmel? What's this little man? He's a tiny little man. Because the Malachim are huge. Malach Machoel is 3 times bigger than the whole world. That's one Malach. They got very upset. What's a little person? A little man? A kleinchike people? What's he doing up here with us Malachim? And they came around Moshe Rabbeinu and they were breathing fire. These huge Malachim, we can't even understand what it is. And Moshe Rabbeinu got very, very scared. Uh-oh. He said, what are you doing here? I'm going to get the Torah. What? You are going to get the Torah? Now the Malachim were upset because they wanted the Torah. Before this, Kinalach, the Torah was like a beautiful treasure by Hashem. He didn't give the Torah yet. We know certain people had the Torah before it was given. Yes, certain people had the Torah before it was given. But to give the Torah to everybody, to give the Torah, Matan Torah, this didn't happen yet. And even the Torah that they knew before the giving of the Torah, it wasn't the same exactly. I mean, there's a lot to say about this, but it wasn't the same exactly as the Torah after the giving of the Torah. There were certain parts and certain things and certain koyach that was given from the Torah before the Torah was given. But not like the Torah after it was given. And the Malachim wanted it. And they said to Hashem, we want the Torah, not this little man. And they even said, according to Shulchan Aruch, Hashem has to give us the Torah. You know why? Let's say somebody is living in a house and they have a field. And let's say next door, the neighbor wants to sell his field. Okay? Reuven wants to buy the field next door that Shimon is selling. And let's say Levi comes from 1,000 miles away. And Levi says, oh, I hear that Shimon is selling his field. I would like to buy it. Then Reuven says, but Shimon is my next door neighbor. He's right next door. I want to buy the field. Now, can Shimon sell his field to Levi if he wants, or he must sell it to Reuven? Huh? Okay, the thing is that Reuven has to Shimon has to sell it to Reuven, his next door neighbor, before he sells it to Levi. Why? Because he's right next door. If Reuven wants to buy the field right next to him, then he's able to buy it because he's right next door. Shimon has to give it to Reuven, not to Levi. Levi's from 1,000 miles away. This is called Bar Mitzra. He's right next to the border. Now the Malachim said, Hashem, you want to give your Torah. We, Malachim, are close to you. We're right near you. This little man comes from the world. The world is much farther away from you. A little man with a body. And he eats and he sleeps and he drinks. The Torah is not for him. The Torah is for us, Malachim. We're Halik, we're right next to you. You have to give us the Torah. And the Malachim went back to Moshe Rabbeinu and started breathing fire. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do when Hashem said to Moshe, come to my Kisei HaKavod, come to my throne of glory and hold on to it and you answer the Malachim and tell them why you should have the Torah and not them. Kinalach, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Hashem's Kisei HaKavod. What exactly this means, we have no idea. But, of course, we're talking in higher worlds now. And Moshe Rabbeinu held on to the Kisei HaKavod and nothing happened to him and he was able to answer the Malachim. And he said, Malachim, do you know what it says in the Torah? It says, for example, you shouldn't have any getchkes. The Malachim said, what's a getchke? See, you don't even have getchkes up here. How can you not have a getchke? How can you have a mitzvah not to have a getchke if you don't have a getchke anyway? It says you have to respect your father and your mother. Now, what's a father and a mother? Well, people have fathers and mothers, not Malachim. So, how can you respect a father and mother? It says in the Torah, you're not allowed to steal money. You're not allowed to steal things. Silver and gold. And jewels. The Malachim said, things? Silver, gold, jewels? Money? What's that? Yeah. In the Himmel, you don't have silver and gold and things and money. You don't have bodies. You don't have anything like that. The Torah is not for you. In the Torah it says, you eat kosher food, and you're not allowed to eat not kosher food. What's food? Do Malachim eat food? No. What do they need the mitzvah of kosher food if they don't have food? In the Torah it says, give tzedakah to poor people, help poor people. What's poor people? You don't have poor, you don't have anything. Nobody's poor in the Shemayim. You don't have poor people, you don't have money. What, do they have a hand they can put in a pocket and pull out some money? They don't have a hand even to give the tzedakah. It says in the Torah, put tefillin on your hand and your head. What's a hand? What's a head? You don't have a hand, you don't have a head. You put on the tefillin, where's it going to go? There's nowhere to put it. Kinalach, the Torah is not for Malachim. It's for people. With a Yetzirah, with a body, this is exactly who the Torah is for. Not a Malach. It says over here, Yavoyu Zeizolin Kumin. It said in the other pasuk, Tavi Duzol's Brengen. Now what happened? At first Hashem said, Tavi Duzol's Brengen. You should bring them. That you, Noach, should go out and bring the animals to the Teva. What means you should bring them? You have to go out and get them. Over here in the pasuk it says, now Yavoyu, they will come. What means they will come? You sit at home, and Mr. Elephant comes to you. You sit in your house, and Mr. Giraffe comes to you. Now, wait a minute. Does he have to go out and get them? Or are they going to come to him? Why it says in one pasuk, Tavi, and the other pasuk, Yavoyi. You know why? Okay, this is what happened. Hashem said, you go and bring them. But Noach started to kvetch. He said, how could I bring a big elephant? How could I bring a wild lion? How could I bring this? How could I do this? How could I do that? Hashem said, wait a minute. You have shilas? Does Hashem get happy when a person's asking shilas on Hashem? Or Hashem doesn't like when a person's asking shilas on Hashem? We learned, remember, in the beginning of Va'era, when Moshe Rabbeinu had shilas on the Eibishter got upset, remember? And he had good shilas. Now over here, Noach also had shilas. He says, how can I do all this? Hashem said, wait a minute, do you think I would ask you if you couldn't do it? In other words, according to Noach Seichel, he can't do it. Hashem said, you go out and you're going to see. You're going to go to the elephant. You'll say like this, come here. And the elephant will come. You go to the tiger. Hashem said to come to the teva. All right, I'm coming. How do you know what kind of a big nest could happen when you go and get a wild tiger? You think Hashem is going to tell you to go get the wild tiger and he's going to bite your head off? That's what Noach was afraid of. How could I get a big tiger? He's dangerous. Wait, Hashem, who said to go get the tiger? Hashem. So Hashem knows that if you get the tiger, nothing's going to happen to you. A lion, he's scary, the lion. Don't worry about it. You go to the lion. Hello, Mr. Lion. It's time to go to the table. All right, I'm coming. So you'd be able to do it. When you start asking shilas on Hashem, that's when you cannot do it. If you say, look, Hashem said, I'm going to do it. Finished, you could do it. No problem. Now, since Noach started kvetching, Hashem said, okay, Noach, you will not be getting the treifa animals because you already asked shilas, and once you have shilas, you cannot do it the same way. The same thing in Parshas B'Shalach. The Yidden came to the Yam Suf, like I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you now, I'll tell you again. The Yidden came to the Yam Suf, they had shilas. It's a big ocean. What are we going to do? The Mitzrayim are chasing after us. Oy vey. And some Yidden said, let's just kill ourselves in the ocean. Otherwise the Mitzrayim will kill us. Another Yidden said, nah, that's no good. We'll fight the Goyim. We'll fight the Goyim till we die. Another Yidden said, that's no good. Let's put up our hands and surrender. What means surrender? What means surrender? You wear suspenders? We'll give up. We'll go back. We'll be slaves again. We'll go back to Mitzrayim. We'll be slaves again. Better than to get killed. Other Yidden said, no, that's all wrong. Let's take out our siddur and daven. Now, everybody had shilas on Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu said, everybody's wrong. Even the ones who want to take out the siddur, everyone is wrong. What should we do? No, we should go right to Har Sinai. What did Hashem say? Go out of Mitzrayim to get the Torah. Where are you going to get the Torah? On Har Sinai. The Yidden said, but Har Sinai, it's on the other side of the Yam Suf. How can we go there? Wait a minute. Hashem said to go there. What's the problem? Now, they had a Shilas. Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped into the Yam Suf and started to go into the Yam Suf like a Meshuggah. He's walking through the Yam Suf. Everybody thinks he's nuts. After a while, people said, you know what? He's the only normal person. We're all Meshuggahs. Because he's doing what Hashem said. We're just standing here like we're asking Shilas. Nachshon is doing what Hashem said. They all started to walk through the Yam Suf. Then Moshe Rabbeinu put a stick in the Yam Suf. That's when it split. Now, the Rebbe once said, all of this is with Shilas. Yam Suf didn't have to split. There was a better way to do it. You know what's the better way to do it? They would have come to Yam Suf. They would have said, eh, so what? Yam Suf, who cares? They start walking. They would walk over the water. They would walk right over the water. How? The Baal Shem Tov did it. One time there was robbers in the forest. Again, the Baal Shem Tov is walking. On the way, when he's walking, he's learning, he's thinking, he's saying the Baal Peh. His mind is somewhere else. He's not looking at trees and flowers and birdies. He's thinking a Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham does not go four amis, four steps. He never takes four steps without thinking Torah. This is a Talmud Chacham. Makin Allah. The Baal Shem Tov is going, the robbers see the Baal Shem Tov again. They say, hey, look, an easy catch. Let's go and rob him. And they start running, and the Baal Shem Tov sees the robbers coming, and he goes, he runs. And the robbers are chasing the Baal Shem Tov through the forest, and all of a sudden, up ahead is a big lake. Hey, we'll chase him to the lake. He has no place to run because there's the lake there. When he gets to the lake, he has no place to go. We'll catch him right by the lake. They get to the lake. The Baal Shem Tov gets to the lake. He takes off of his belt. The Baal Shem Tov gets to the lake. He takes off his belt. Hey, what's happening? This Jew is going to go swimming now. He doesn't know that robbers are chasing him. He's going to go swimming. He takes off his belt. Well, let's see what happens. The Baal Shem Tov now puts his belt down on the lake. And he walks to the end of his belt. The belt doesn't fall in and he doesn't fall in. The robbers say, hey, what's happening over here? It looks like he's walking on his belt on the water. He gets to the end of his belt. Then he takes his belt and he moves it. So now the front of the belt is sticking way out in the water and he's standing by the end of his belt. And now he walks again to the end of his belt, so now he's way into the water, walking on his belt. And the robbers see this, they can't believe it. Each time he gets to the end of his belt, he just pulls it. So now he's standing on the back, and the end is sticking further. And then he walks now again to the end of his belt, he walks further into the lake. And each time he goes further and further into the lake, walking on his belt. He walks to the end, he gets to the end. He reaches down and pulls the whole belt forward so the end is sticking way in front of him. And he's standing by the buckle now, by the end. And now he walks to the end of the belt again. And he moves now into the middle of the lake. The robbers said, well, if this old Jew could do it, we could also do it. So they took off their belts and they start going into the lake, trying to climb on their belts. They keep falling into the water and they start to fall, get wet, and they can't swim, they start drowning, because the robbers on land, they're not pirates on the ocean, they can't go in the ocean. They don't, nobody, their tati didn't teach them how to swim. You know, it's a mitzvah that your tati teaches you how to swim, you know that? You have to learn how to swim. But these robbers were not yidden, their tatis didn't teach them how to swim, and they started drowning in the lake. The Baal Shem Tov now went to the other side of the lake on his belt. He got to the other side, he put on his belt back, he dried it off a little bit, and he goes weiter on the road, thinking Torah, going wherever he's going, and the robbers are splashing around in the water. Some of them are drowning, some of them are splashing, they're all wet, their clothes are all wet, and they couldn't figure out how the Baal Shem Tov got across the lake. And kind of luck, when the Yidden came to the Yam Suf, the same thing could have happened. Instead of all these shilas, they could have gone right over the water. If they would have just said, Har Sinai is on the other side of the Yam Suf, Hashem said to go out of Mitzrayim to get the Torah on Har Sinai, so it's a Yam Suf, so what, big deal, we'll go. They would have gone right over the water to Har Sinai. Okay, you know Pesach is coming up, and we only get things with a very good heksher, kashal Pesach. Now, one of the things is sugar. Now, sugar comes from a plant which is not chametz, it's not kidneys, it's the sugar cane or the sugar beet. I mean, it's got nothing to do with chametz, really. But you need a good heksher to make sure that it's kashal Pesach. Now, there's such a true story, I'm going to tell you right now, that a person went to a Rav, and he said, you know, why do I need special sugar for Pesach? There's no chametz there. The Rav said, we live very close to the factory that they make the sugar. Why don't you go over there one day and just see how they make it and figure out if you need a good heksher or not. The man went to the sugar factory, a big building, and over there, a lot of workers and a lot of machines, and there were two very big open, like huge pots that they cooked the sugar in. And he was walking around over there looking at the factory, and all of a sudden the whistle blows. That means it's lunchtime. The workers come down from their machines and their places, and they go take out their lunches, and they're eating. And the man starts to leave. You know, he saw the factory, didn't see anything special. All of a sudden, as he's going out, he passes by a bench of workers, and he hears one worker telling the other, oh, what a sandwich my wife gave me today. I don't like this kind of sandwich. The other worker says, oh, why don't you do what I do when I have a sandwich I don't like? This is what I do. Give me your sandwich. He takes the sandwich. He climbs up near one of these big pots where they cook the sugar. He takes the big sandwich, the big bread, and he takes it over the side of the big pot, and he dips it into the cooking sugar, and he pulls it out, covered with sugar, and he gives it to his friend. Look, it's covered with sugar. It's going to taste like cake. Delicious. Akinalach, what happened when he stuck the bread into the cooking sugar? Well, not only, you know, the bread got covered with sugar, but of course a few pieces of bread are going to break off into the sugar. So what is inside of the sugar now? Chametz. Chametz can get into the sugar. Now, of course, if there's proper ashkacha over there, they're going to make sure they don't eat any chametz close to the sugar, so that would never happen. So do you understand why you need hashkacha on sugar or anything that's kashal Pesach? Because some way, somehow, something can get in there. The Rebbe Maharash could hear and understand four different things at one time. Now, let's say one boy is speaking to you in English. You can hear that. You can listen to him and know what he's saying. Let's say another boy comes. At the same time the boy is speaking to you in English, another boy starts speaking to you in Yiddish. I mean, even if it's English, you'll get mixed up. Two people are speaking to you at the same time. Let's say a third boy comes and starts speaking to you in Hebrew. So there's three boys speaking to you at the same time. your head is going to get mishkababbled and mixed up. Let's say another boy comes over to you and starts speaking to you in French. Four boys, four languages at one time. Your head is going to spin like a dreidel. You're not even going to know what's going on with one conversation. Shh. Now the Rebbe Maharash, this is a story that's known. Shh. They brought four people with four different newspapers. Now exactly which language, I don't know, but let's just pretend just for, so we understand this story. Let's say one newspaper was Russian. So a man starts reading the newspaper in Russian. And a second newspaper was French. Somebody else is speaking French. A third newspaper is Italian. He starts speaking Italian. And a fourth newspaper is in Polish. And he starts speaking Polish. Four different languages at one time. Now, you or me, most people would get all mixed up and mishkababbled, and they wouldn't even know what's going on with one person because four people are speaking to them at the same time, four different languages. After they stopped reading, the Rebbe Maharash told the one who was reading French exactly what he said in French. Then he told the one that was reading in Russian exactly what he said in Russian. And the one that was reading in Italian, he told him exactly what he said in Italian. And the fourth one that was reading in Polish, he told him exactly what he was reading in Polish. And each one was reading different things. And the Rebbe Maharash didn't get mixed up at all. Because the tzaddik has the koyach of Hashem, kinalach. Hashem knows exactly what everybody is thinking, what you're saying, what's doing. Not only people, but everything in the world. And Hashem looks at it, and he doesn't get mixed up. He knows exactly what's going on. Shh. But in this lunchroom, I don't know if it's big tzaddikim that you understand everything that's going on, or everybody's just speaking a bunch of different things at the same time, and it's making a lot of kids mishkababbled, and they can't hear the story. So I want it quiet. By the way, there's a story about the Rebbe. You should know this story. That Rabbi Groner, everybody knows Rabbi Groner is one of the Rebbe's secretaries. I heard this from Rabbi Groner himself. Huh? It was Erev Rosh Hashanah, and the Rebbe asked Rabbi Groner to do something in his room. So Rabbi Groner was in the room with the Rebbe. And a few minutes later, there was a knock on the door, and the Rebbe said to Rabbi Groner, it's Rabbi Chodakov. Rabbi Chodakov was the Rebbe's special personal secretary. The Rebbe said, it's Rabbi Chodakov, you should let him in. So Rabbi Groner went to the door, and he let in Rabbi Chodakov. Rabbi Chodakov went to the Rebbe's desk, and the Rebbe was writing a letter. So Rabbi Chodakov was waiting next to the Rebbe, that the Rebbe, you know, should stop writing, and then the Rebbe will speak to Rabbi Chodakov. But the Rebbe didn't stop writing, and he was looking down, and he kept on writing. And Rabbi Chodakov just was waiting. So the Rebbe said, "Nu." He says to Rabbi Chodakov, "Nu." In other words, it means that Rabbi Chodakov should speak to the Rebbe. And Rabbi Chodakov, of course, thought that the Rebbe should stop writing, but the Rebbe says, "Nu." So he started to speak to the Rebbe. He told the Rebbe whatever he had to say. And Rabbi Chodakov thought that as soon as he would speak, the Rebbe would stop writing and listen to him. But the Rebbe went on writing. So Rabbi Chodakov stopped speaking. And the Rebbe kept on writing. And the Rebbe says again, "Nu, nu." He wanted Rabbi Chodakov to continue speaking. So Rabbi Chodakov is speaking one thing, and the Rebbe goes on writing his letter. And after Rabbi Chodakov was speaking, the Rebbe answered him and was speaking to Rabbi Chodakov, and at the same time, the Rebbe was continuing writing a letter. Now, kinalach, when you write a letter, of course, you have to be thinking about what you're writing. You can't just write by yourself. You're writing words, you're writing sentences, you're writing ideas. The Rebbe was writing a letter, answering somebody about something, and at the same time, he was answering Rabbi Chodakov about a completely different thing. So we know that the Rebbe could do two different things at least at one time. Maybe he could do more. I don't know any stories about that. And the Rebbe Marash, we know a story that he could do four things. Maybe he could do more things than four things. But we just don't have any more stories.